Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Hi, everyone. How are you? I hope you had a great long weekend. My name is Lira Schwartz-Levy, and I wanted to spend our time today talking about the birth and growth of a product, which is really just a collection of things that I've learned and things that went well for me or didn't go as well for me in the experience that I have with taking an idea all the way to production and then growing it as a product and then overseeing a portfolio of products. Before we do that, just wanted to provide a bit of introduction on my journey so far. I started my career in the Israeli Defense Force. I was born and raised in Israel, and I was responsible for 200 soldiers and everything that's HR related. There, I found my passion for technology that led me to do my double major in computer science and management in Tel Aviv University. And during that time, I was working in really small startups, 3 to 5 people, doing everything from the development to the marketing to the UX and the QA. I also wanted to see the other side of the scale and worked for corporates like Microsoft and McAfee. And then after being on the individual contributor and the lead side on both product and engineering, I wanted to start my MBA, moved from Israel to the US and started my MBA at MIT. I also got to intern at Adobe as a product marketing manager between year one and year two. And then after graduating from MIT, I joined forces with the Mouse and joined the Walt Disney Company in a number of leadership roles. And today I am part of Disney's direct-to-consumer and international segment. I am heading the product organization for a portfolio of consumer identity services, and those services are everything to do with to login, registration, user profile, user preferences, and they are being leveraged by across the different Disney sites and apps, whether it's ESPN or Marvel or the latest and greatest Disney Plus, and they're used by millions of users daily. So before we get to the actual topic of the presentation, just wanted to kind of share some expectations around this presentation and our time today. First, those are kind of what I'm going to talk about is not scientific or guaranteed to success. It's a collection of lessons learned and observations as I was going through my experience on both corporates and startups in taking ideas all the way to production and then growing them into mature products or a portfolio of products. And I really hope it's gonna be fun and interactive and most importantly, value add for you as you're going through maybe getting the next idea into production or you're working on a product to mature it or whatever it is that you're doing and you find this valuable. We'd love to hear your questions, thoughts, feedback in the comment section during this presentation and also after. And also just wanted to mention that I'm representing myself today as Giraz the Professional. I'm not representing the Walt Disney Company, my current employer. And this presentation is really more valuable when it's like that in a presentation form as opposed to a standalone. So let's just start with a story that's a personal story that one, I hope most of you are gonna relate to, and two, bear with me of how it's related to the topic today. So these are my parents. When I was younger, I was living at my parents' place and I had no idea how lucky I was because they were the ones paying the bills, they were paying for bowling nights, they were taking care of the food, I was just there when it was ready. Because then when I met my husband and we moved into our apartment, that was one growth phase. suddenly I had to change my focus. I had to change the way that I organized myself. I needed to ask different questions. And I got introduced to IKEA and how to build furniture. And then after a few years, when we were very mature in renting an apartment, we decided to pack our stuff and our dog that we had at the time and become homeowners. And that was another growth phase for us, because now as a homeowner, as opposed to renting an apartment, there's new questions to answer. There's new focus to pay attention to. There's new ways to organize ourselves and new things to worry about that we had to learn to be successful as homeowners. So how is this all related to a birth and growth of a product? It's because I found very similar thinking and very similar growth phase when I was growing products, all the way from a Blue Sky idea to production. Because in the different phases of growth, there was different focus and different team structure and different structure and processes and different mindset and different questions that were needed to answer as we went and grow the product from one phase to another to be able to be successful within that and grow it to that next phase of growth. So maybe just starting with a quiz to get us warmed up and make this a bit more interactive. I'm gonna read the question and then give you 10 seconds, about 10 seconds to put your answers in the comments section. So the question is, what percentage of official ideas that reach the development phase are becoming a commercial success? Is it 6%, 15%, 34%, or 50%? So put your comments within the, put your answers within the comment section, and I'll give you a few seconds and then we'll reveal the answer. And you can look it up in Google if you feel like cheating. No, I'm kidding. Okay, I'm seeing answers coming in. Great. Give it a few more seconds. Okay, so the answer is only 6% of all official ideas and 14% of all promising ideas that reach the development phase are becoming a commercial success by existing literature that's mentioned in an article from Inc.com from the CEO of Zervana. And so that was an interesting, not so optimistic, but interesting stat that I wanted to explore more, because there's a lot that is happening between an idea to a commercial success. And so looking at an article from 42 Review, they looked at different startups and they looked at statistics for 2020 and estimated that 90% for 2020 of new startups fail. And the great thing was that they started breaking it down even further, which is very interesting. So they saw that 20% of the startups are not making it through the first year. They then saw that 34% of the startups are closing their startup within the 2 years. 50% are only making it to the 5-year mark. And 75% are failing, meaning only 25% are making it to the 15 years mark. And that's due to a lot of the reasons and the observations that I'm going to discuss today from my experience and from other articles and research out there on how some things really make or break the startup's chance to move to that next level. So the first thing is the first phase. There's an idea, and now we're in the race for an MVP. And one of the things that are really important to pay attention is focus. And within that focus, solving one problem and need for one customer. A postmortem that was done on more than 100 startups by CB Insights discovered that The number one reason for new startups to fail is because they did not solve a market need and they lacked focus. And that was 42% of the startups that failed because of that reason. So that's really important in this stage to be super strict on who's the customer, and from all the potential needs or problems that they have, focus on that critical ones and the top ones that would make the difference of them adopting the product and using it. And it's easier said than done. In my experience, in this race for an MVP, there's a lot of pressure. There's limitation of funding or limitation of time. And sometimes there's many customers that want to be included in the MVP. Stakeholders are sometimes becoming customers. Investors or leadership sometimes becomes customers. And it's really important to be strict at this phase on what is the one problem, the one pain point, and the one focus customer that is the I would say pivot and is the main focus for this phase. And then the second thing is to show results early. As I mentioned, this phase is a phase where there's limited time and limited funding. And so I've discovered in my experience that getting the stakeholders, the customers, the leadership or investors involved very early with results actually helps them to be more invested and be more excited for the MVP, as opposed to waiting all the way to the MVP release to reveal the product. So that means sharing mocks, for example, even if the product is not yet built, or sharing pieces of the product, even though the product itself is not even there. And one of the things that I've seen make a real difference in the success of an MVP is having an alpha and a beta version that are a few months before the MVP release with a few friendly customers. And that really helps from two perspectives. One, it helps getting feedback from real customers and iterate and evolve the product to make it better when the rest of the world sees it. And the second thing is it also gives the chance to collect data and metrics and basically prove out the value of the MVP product before day one. And so the second thing that is critical for the startup, for the MVP to a idea at this phase, and for startups too, is the team. The core team that's building the first MVP version of the product is critical. It needs to be small, up to one pizza size, and have broad skill sets. So for example, within software development, having full stack developers instead of having back-end developers only and front-end developers only. Having team members that can do multiple stuff really enables the flexibility to move them around when there's unexpected things coming up. So for example, if the front end is way ahead of schedule and the back end had a lot of unknowns and is behind schedule, having those full stack developers, having broad set of skills helps everyone kind of move into where the product needs focus to be successful. And so the other thing is being patient with building the team. Having the right team, a diverse team, which each one of them have their own strengths so they can shine on their own right, but they can complement each other, is really important for a startup to be successful. And it was there was a research from the Startup Genome Project that showed that solo founders are taking 3.6x more time to grow out of the startup phase, and that balanced teams have 2.9x more user growth than unbalanced teams. So being patient, even though there's pressure to get the MVP out there from customers, from investors, making the right hiring, building the right team is critical. And the other thing about the team is with those hires, making sure that the culture of the team and the personalities that are joining the team are ones that are enjoying a very family-like culture. This is a very intense space. And so having a mentality of a family, of working hard, playing hard, those really help when there is challenges to the startups. There's a lot of ups and downs in this phase from an MVP, from an idea to an MVP. And being that kind of core family really helps overcome that for the team as a whole and for the product as well. The other thing is around structure and process. So in this phase from an MVP to idea, there isn't a lot of process really and not a lot of structure. It's a flat org. There is a core team. There's one end-to-end leader that ideally has experience both on the business side and also technology side. And there's really kind of a light process, if any. In my experience, when I was having ideas only starting to be brought to life by a team, starting with sprints and stand-ups and kind of the known agile Scrum or Kanban frameworks had less success than for the first month or two, just give the team to be heads down on developing the foundation of the product. And that means I removed stand-ups, I removed sprints, I removed almost any process other than have the team commit for a known scope to be done in that first month or two, and then have check-ins with them along that to kind of make sure that they're on the right track and if they need anything. But if you have the right team, like I was fortunate to have, then they didn't just commit, deliver them their commitment for this phase. Many times they delivered even more than what they committed on. And then afterwards, when the foundation is there, after the few months, we basically introduced back the stand-ups, the sprints, kind of that tracking, but still in a very light way. And so in the mindset of an MVP to an idea to an MVP, as I said, this is a intense phase. This is a race. It's a sprint. It's not a marathon. And so it's really either you get something out there that's successful or you don't. There isn't really a middle ground there. And because of that, there isn't a lot of racy. Everyone's doing everything. I wouldn't say there's no work-life balance, but that's not really the emphasis. The team is not working 100 hours a week, but if there's individuals in the hiring process, for example, that mentioned about wanting to do more of a balanced 40 hours a week, this phase of a product is not really a good match with that, because there's a lot of hours that sometimes need to be put to kind of get on time to a successful MVP. And then this is where each one of the team members need to be 100% all in, believing in the product, believing in the value, and giving 200% to make sure that that happens and that the MVP is successful on time with reasonable quality that solves the customer problem in the most straightforward way. And in that perspective, perfect here is the enemy of done. This phase shouldn't be about a pixel perfect UI. It shouldn't be about a perfect quality assurance framework. It shouldn't be about 5% or less of tech debt. There's a lot of compromises here because the focus is to get something out there, show results early, as we said, and solve the problem in the most straightforward way. And that's okay to have more tech debt than usual. It's okay to not test all the edge cases out there. And it's okay to have a good enough, as long as it's intuitive and has a reasonable quality to give the customers to be able to do what they need to do. And from now we're in the process, we're in the phase where you launched your MVP, it was uber successful, you now have customers for your product, and this is where the product goes from an MVP to a more mature product. And right after, the day after MVP release, the focus should be on sustaining on that adoption and establishing the customer base and growing and building upon that success. Because with that success, I've seen that there's a lot of credibility, there's a lot of buzz, there's a more appetite to add resources, and there's also a spike that is important to be prepared for. There's a spike because now customers are using the product, so they have more things that they want to either change or add. Same for leadership and stakeholders. There's now something out there that's tangible that they can react to. And that creates kind of a spike in that demand and in the features and the backlog, that intake that's coming. And so the best way to manage that spike that I've seen is first having a very basic form of a product strategy that clearly says what the product is and what the product isn't. And that helps set expectations with customers and with stakeholders and with leadership or investors. When the product was MVP, product launch was successful, I've seen a lot of opportunities from new customers or new use cases that were further away from what the product's mission is, for what it's trying to solve. And I was able to use having a product strategy, even if it's basic form, as a way to be able to say no to those opportunities and keep the product and team focused. The other thing that I would recommend from a team perspective in this phase is, as again, there is a lot of success, so there's more appetite to increase the team. There's a spike in demand, so there's a need to get the team to be bigger in size. And I would extend that team, and if it extends from more than one pizza size, I would split it to two small teams. The other things that I've done that were successful was carving out from that growth, carving out some of the capacity of the team to work on the next thing, to work on the next growth or the next new use cases to extend and grow the product, and keep the rest of the team focused on sustaining and kind of solving for the current demand and customers and establishing those customers. From a roles perspective, the team is bigger. There's customers out there. There's more maturity that's needed, and agile processes and frameworks are really good for this phase. Scrum and Kanban, moving kind of to new roles that are technical product manager and having a Scrum Master are helpful. From my experience, I've seen that Scrum for a day after MVP worked way better than Kanban. With the teams that I've been working with in the projects, Kanban required a bit more maturity, and that was hard because to accomplish a day after MVP, just because the team is still trying to get used to the new phase. And this is where this third point is really important, about not underestimating, giving some thought, time and giving the thought to lead the team through this growth phase from a change management perspective. The team that was there for the sprint of to get to MVP is probably might not be 100% the same team that is needed for the phase of growing it after MVP, because there's new processes and there's things that in MVP, in pre-MVP, the team was able to do, like less process and less strategy. And post-MVP, there's more process and there's more strategy, and maybe there's more oversight or less flexibility on quality or tech debt. And so there's a journey there that most of the team goes through to understand that there's trade-offs. There's new things that are happening. There's things that are continuing from pre-MVP. And there's some things that are stopping from a pre-MVP into the post-MVP phase. And that's really important to give the right time for that. From a structure and process, It's still flat with a few key lead roles, as I mentioned, the technical product manager or the scrum master. Still agile processes, as we've mentioned, scrum or Kanban, and new project tools. So where very lightweight tools, pre-MVP like Trello, were a really good solution, this phase really require more maturity and a bit more transparency on the backlog for customers, stakeholders, and investors. So tools like Jira or version ones are good for this purpose. And then still very light intake and not that much of a, not a year's worth of a roadmap is needed at this phase, but it does need a bit more than the next sprint as we were before MVP, where there was a very clear set scope in advance. From a mindset perspective, I mentioned that a few times, it's not a sprint now, it's a marathon. And because of that, there's longer term thinking that's needed. The team needs a bit more of the work-life balance because now it's a longer term way of operating in this phase and growing to maturity. So whereas there's a flexibility, or I would say there's more option to have the team go on the pre-MVP sprint mode and kind of put in the hours. This post-MVP requires more work-life balance to keep the team healthy and productive. And also there's more importance for the product quality and health, a more mature quality framework, and more less tolerance for high percentage of tech debt. And there's users using the product. So every feature that's out there is important to make sure it doesn't break what is currently there because the customers are relying on that for their business. And so this is where there is the growth of a product. But what happens when that product becomes a platform with multiple products in it? And so there's a portfolio of products that now needs to grow and be successful in that phase. And so the focus of that phase is all about the X product connectivity. It's all about the X product engagement. What things are streamlined on the portfolio level and what things are different from each one of the products within the portfolio should be the focus and the questions that are being asked and answered. The good thing when there's a lot of, when the team is awesome and across the different products, they innovate and they try to make things more efficient. And sometimes there's an overlap in tools, an overlap in functionality, an overlap in maybe roles. And that's where optimization on the infrastructure technology side, optimization on the org structure is important for this phase. And also having still a strategy, but as opposed to a product strategy, now there's a 5,000 foot view and 100,000 foot view of a mission, of a vision, of market trends, of core challenges and strategic goals and themes that the portfolio needs. So each one of the products take that into their 50,000 foot view and create their own product strategy that kind of takes and gets inspired or connects to that portfolio strategy. So there's an end-to-end connectivity and end-to-end offering between all the products in the portfolio. From a team perspective, this is where there's multiple teams because there's multiple products. Would still recommend each one of the teams to be one pizza size. There's many ways of kind of organizing the teams, either around functionality or on the customers or around the actual product implementation. There's X product roles that are needed that weren't there before. For example, there's the scrum of scrums that's needed, or release management, or UX that looks holistically and make sure that the user experience has the same user experience look and feel to it across the products. And then from a structure and process perspective, there's more layers. There's a leadership layer, there's a shared services layer, and then there's the actual self-sufficient engineering teams. And from a process perspective, the one team Scrum or Kanban Agile framework works well within the products, but across the products or even within a product across different areas, those are multiple Agile teams. So they need a scaled Agile framework. SAFe is one of the frameworks that offers an approach for that. The other thing is more maturity on prioritization, not within the products, but also across the products. And for that, that is there's different metrics and approaches to do prioritization that's quantitative first before bringing in the qualitative aspect of it. One of it is the weighted shortest job first that takes a ROI from the value to the level of effort and allows for that apples to apples comparison and do an all up prioritization across the portfolio. And in this case, as there's multiple teams that are running and innovating and delivering, there needs to be more clear racy. There's more roles. So the teams and the products are benefiting from knowing where each one is starting and ending. And there's a more mature intake process, and there needs to be a longer term roadmap view as well. So this was the kind of collection of the observation and things that I've seen. I wanted to kind of summarize with a few key takeaways for things I've seen from the birth and growth of a product. So the first one that we've talked about is customer, customer, customer. Always have a focus customer that you're centered around. Make sure you're solving their top needs. There's a process of customer development by Steve Blank that has a few principles that I really like. One of them is there's no such thing as nice features. That is true for every growth phase of the product, but especially critical from the MVP, from an idea to an MVP product launch. And there's another thing that he says within that principles of his theory, which is that customers are not inside the building. The customers are outside the building. The team is not building for themselves. They're not building for leadership. They're building for the customers. So starting from the customers and going backwards from there is going to promise more success. The other thing is there's multiple ways to be successful. There isn't only one way to be successful and grow the product through those different phases. And there's a lot of frameworks and tools and disciplines out there. And my advice to you is just listen to your team, listen to your customers, adopt the things that you think are going to make them successful. Trust yourself and trust your team and customers to guide you on what to adopt and what's not working and what is working. And even what you're adopting, you can just adopt some of it. You don't have to adopt it word to word. So having a lot of your own judgment and having a lot of feedback from the teams and customers and stakeholders as you execute those frameworks or disciplines is really important. And then as we've talked about, for each one of the phases, knowing what the product is and isn't, having a product strategy would help set expectations, would make conversations around prioritization or rejecting new opportunities or use cases that are not part of the core competency of the product is super helpful. And then can't stress this one enough, the right people in the right roles with the right skill sets in the right time or phase of the product is key. The team, whether it's the core team or the team that's a bigger team after MVP, or the teams that kind of have or combine and are in the portfolio of the products that you oversee, they are going to make or break the product or the portfolio success. One of the advices that I got from one of my mentors, which I really liked, is that change and growth usually are not constrained from technology. They are constrained by the culture. They are constrained by the teams and the team members that are the ones that either move together the product forward or not helping in and actually being in the way of it to move forward and succeed. And then, as I said, change management, that is something that needs to be thought of, that needs to be strategic about, that needs the time to help the team grow from one phase to another phase, because there's a lot of change that's happening and there's a change management process that is needed to make sure that the team is still motivated, productive, excited to deliver the value and push the product either in its current phase or to that next phase of growth. So thank you so much for the time today. Was great to be here as part of ProductCon. If you want to reach out to me in LinkedIn, more than happy to, and have a great rest of the ProductCon day and rest of the week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.